The Birmingham Buddhist Centre is part of an international Buddhist organisation called the Triratna Buddhist Community. And I suppose, what could you say about that? Well, there's a few things to say. First of all, that it is international. Secondly, that it is a modern Buddhist school. It was founded in the mid-60s. And so that means we don't always fit into some of the classic categories that the Buddhist tradition has thought of itself within. And probably the most important thing, and the thing that will most come across as I speak, is that Triratna is what I call principial Buddhism. Principial Buddhism. So what that means is that it's the man who founded this tradition, like the Buddha himself, is always asking, so what, you know, what's the question behind the question? Yeah, so looking for principles. Yeah, and the most important and interesting thing about principles is that a principle can never be a rule. Yeah, principles are bigger than rules. Yeah, so as I'm speaking, as whatever you know about Buddhism or meditation, it's really important to bear that in mind. It's not about rules, it's about principles. And the good thing about principles is that gives you something to think about. A principle is there. It's not kind of like wishy-washy or kind of vague or doesn't know what it's talking about. But it says, here's the principle. And then we have to work out what that means for our lives. Yeah. So I personally think it's centrally important to, for Buddhist, life actually, but for Buddhist tradition particularly, and particularly this school of Buddhism, this idea of principles, because it's that combination of real clarity and responsibility. Yeah. So here's a principle. What does that mean for your life? How is that going to apply to you? So it's just important to say that because it's very easy to go through life being feel like you're being told what to do, isn't it? You know, we get a lot of that, people telling us what to do. You know, you should do this, you should do that. Can be helpful, can be a bit disempowering. So just really remember that as I'm speaking. It's like I'm presenting a principles. And you're all intelligent adults who have your own life experience, so you work out what those principles mean for you. So yeah, so I'm going to talk for about 40 minutes and then we'll go and have a cup of tea, and then we'll have two options. You're either we can come back in here and talk a bit more, you know, ask questions, or you can meditate. Yeah, so you'll have two options. You can either ask me what I was talking about, or you can go off and meditate if that's what you prefer to do. Yes. So yeah, so finding peace in a Buddhist manifesto, finding peace in a frantic world. That's the title we chose. But let's kind of take a step back from that. So, because this is obviously, we're here in a Buddhist centre, so what is Buddhism? You know, some of you may have, you know, literally no knowledge of what Buddhism is. So let's go back a step. As I say, I personally think very principially. So what I suggest Buddhism is, this isn't a classic list, I would say that Buddhism is common sense. First and foremost, it's common sense. So again, many of the things you'll hear, you're like, oh yeah, that's just obvious. And it's like, in a way, that's because Buddhism is, you know, we were joking about it just before we came in. It's like things which people say all the time. The reason they say them all the time is because it makes sense. There's a word which I can't remember. Clichés, yeah, thank you. The reason clichés are clichés is because they make sense, but then they become clichéd. So it's common sense. A lot of it's just common sense. But then, and this is probably much more important, one of the things that Buddhism does is it provides a big perspective. Yeah, Buddhism kind of does a lot of space. It does a lot of, you know, making things bigger. Yeah, looking, seeing the bigger picture. Cliche. A big perspective. And what that does is it can have a really positive influence on our outlook. Yeah, because we can, you know what it's like, we get very kind of like narrow and kind of focused and a bit... Often when we're really stressed out about things, we've got very narrow, focused, over-obsessed. So actually just having a much bigger perspective can be very liberating, can be very useful. Of course, ultimately, like we have this statue here. This statue represents the Buddha, who is a human being who completely transformed himself and gained enlightenment. And that is, from a Buddhist perspective, that is the big perspective. Yeah, the big perspective is the possibility of human growth without limit. Yeah, whatever we conceive of as being possible for human beings, Buddhism says there's more. particularly in the realm of our minds and our hearts. Yeah, so it's like, you know, the Buddha's not particularly interested in, you know, doing the 100 meters in 7.6 seconds or whatever it is. You know, that's not what I mean when I'm saying more. I'm saying the Buddha's interested in like the size, the expanse, the positivity, the light in our minds. Yeah. So you've got that big perspective. The third thing that Buddhism is about is actually doing it. So again, we come with the cliches. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, yada, yada, yada. All of those are cliches. They are all also true. Yeah, actually doing something. It's no good having, you know, in a way, that's the danger of common sense, isn't it? The danger of common sense is that we don't live from it. So Buddhism says, well, here's some common sense, and here's how to live from it, and that will make a difference. So that's what I've just said there. It's not unique. Many other kind of wisdom teachings, intelligent, well thought out philosophies, schools of thought, all of those things will include elements of that. But here we are. We're in a Buddhist centre, and my personal impression is that the Buddhist tradition is particularly good at, is particularly clear and kind of coherent in presenting some of those ideas. That's what it's really got to offer. It's like a really clear, coherent message. So, but then coming back to this title, Finding Peace in a Frantic World. The reason we chose that title is because one of the big jobs that Buddhism does is it endeavours to be relevant to people's lives. You know, it's no good, you know, talking about fish over here if everyone's interested in cars over there. It's just a waste of time. So it's something about, well, many of us lead busy, somewhat frantic lives. Many of us want peace. So Buddhism attempts to address life, where people are. So just a little anecdote about the desire to be relevant. And again, in a way, just really unpacking this thing about trying to be real, I suppose. So Sangharakshita, the man who founded the Theravada Buddhist community, he used to give a lot of talks, and it was in a period when Buddhism was very new in this country, so there was very few Buddhist people. So he used to get wheeled on all the time. Whenever anybody wanted a Buddhist thing, he was one of a relatively small number of people who would end up doing it. So it was at a certain time where kind of global conflict was high, and he used to get wheeled on, or used to have events where people were talking about world peace. Yeah, so Buddhism and world peace. Oh, he says, this happened quite a lot where it'd be like a whole Buddhist panel thing. So you'd have a whole bunch of Buddhist teachers standing up, maybe four or five, talking about world peace. And they'd all kind of stand up and they'd say, Buddhism is all about being peaceful and making the world a better place. That's what we need to do to achieve world peace. Hooray! You know, and everybody would clap and be jubilant and sort of they'd sit down very kind of like, well, there we go, we've sorted that one out. And his own take on Buddhism and world peace, he was quite critical of that, because he's saying, well, it's easy to say, hard to do. So what are you actually going to do about it? Like, and in a way, this is the point. Like everyone, intelligent people would agree on some of the key factors that are needed for either world peace or, in our case, internal peace in a frantic world. But the question is, yeah, do we have a coherent explanation, and do we have a coherent strategy for making that change, rather than just saying, hey folks, Buddhism's about peace. The end. It's like, oh, great. Glad I didn't pay to come and listen to that. In the past, the concerns of, you know, like, I suppose this is like during the Cold War, there's a real concern about world peace. I would say, but what are the problems that we face today? Well, there's many problems we face today. But you could say that, particularly if, you know, for us sitting in Moseley on a beautiful July evening, many of the problems we face are much more personal. Yeah, many people feel frantic, a bit depressed, a bit anxious. Those are the major issues of our time, and it's not to dismiss them. Statistics show that in developed countries, depression is the biggest cause of pain in our world. It's in our part of the world, you know, it's the biggest reason for people being out of work, being on medication, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a real issue. And depression, of course, that's just one end of a whole spectrum of experience of, finding life difficult to some extent. So that's the problem. So what can you say? What you can say, well, what does Buddhism have to say about that problem? And in the first place, it's just completely straightforward about it. It says, hey, guess what, folks? We all just want to be happy. Yeah, that's one of Buddhism's kind of like central observations about the human experience. People just want to be happy. Yeah, that is completely normal. Yeah, it's completely normal for us all just to want to be happy. Whatever happiness means for you, you can do a lot of work about defining the term happiness, content, at peace, relaxed. Yeah, whatever that means for you, people just want it. Yeah, people just want to be happy. That's completely normal, yeah. But in some ways, there's something that feels about the way, like Buddhism just kind of naming that, saying that's a central aspect of human experience. You know, quite a lot of other systems of thought, you get the impression they don't really start there, they start somewhere else, and that's already confusing, because, oh, I just want to be happy, actually. You know, I don't care about my soul, for example, I just want to be happy. You know, souls, anyway, let's not go there. But people just want to be happy. So what's the problem? Why are we here? The problem is we think it should be different than how it is. Yeah, we think we're getting it wrong. Yeah, for most people, I would say, to generalise, most people think they should be want to be happy, think that they are, and think that they're getting it wrong because they're not. Yeah, you could say that's the sort of central problem, isn't it? You want to be happy, you don't feel that you are, and you feel that you're getting it wrong somehow, and that's why you're not happy. Yeah, so that's you could say that's the central problem of life, isn't it? We're having one experience, and we think it should be something else, and we add to that, and that makes it worse. Many of you will be aware the secular mindfulness tradition is alive and well in the 21st century. It's having a major impact on our society for the good. And you could say that's a lot of that boils down to just exploring this very simple observation. You have an experience, you don't like it, you know, like you experience pain, you don't like it, and then you feel bad about the pain, and that makes the pain worse. Yeah, and therefore you have a real problem. Yeah, so it's really useful for people who experience chronic pain. It's like you've got chronic pain and you think you shouldn't be having it, and you give yourself a hard time for having it. And actually, you know, there's a lot of things in life we can't do anything about, but we can do something about the story we tell ourselves about what's happening. That's where the real difference can be made. So what you could say, it's all about expectation, isn't it? It's all about what we expect to be happening, what we think should be happening. So kind of stepping away from chronic pain for a moment, just to sort of like the general experience of being alive. This is what, you know, so much of what I'm going to say now, you come under the heading of common sense and principles. So, you know, like much of our lives, we're propelled into this set of expectations about what life should be like. Yeah. Advertising, the stories we see on TV, the soap operas. It's quite, in some ways it can be quite obvious, in some ways it can be quite insidious, can't it? You know, like for, you know, like, life is better with, you know, Gillette Max 17, you know, yeah, ching, and suddenly my life is better, da-da. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, God, I haven't got Gillette Max 17, my life isn't better, oh, if only I had it. Like, it's quite simple, but it is, you know, that is impinging on our minds every day. And like, you could take myself as an example. I don't own a TV. I haven't regularly watched TV for years. So it's like I'm really not very exposed to that level of advertising. I just find it quite interesting. But nonetheless, I consistently find myself in situations when I think life should be different how it is. And I find it's just, it's difficult, it's painful. I'm like, oh, life should be different to what it is right now. Yeah, you know, the pursuit of pleasure, like what do we do for fun? The amount of pleasure we get out of our pleasurable experiences. I don't know about you, but there can be this constant thing where you think it should be better than it is, and then you don't enjoy what it is because you're thinking it should be better. I was talking about with a good friend the other day about going on holiday, and how, you know, like going on holiday is one of the most stressful things people can do, apparently, because you take this massive expectation of pleasure, and it's like, this is going to be it. And then you get there, and yeah, sure, you have a nice time, But there's this constant feeling like it should be different than what it is. I had it just a few weeks ago. My partner and I were going to go on holiday, and we got into the whole like lastminute.com kind of bubble, and you're kind of like sitting there online going, where can get a cheap flight, and will it be sunny enough, and what will the hotel be like, and you're looking at all these places in Turkey, and they don't have very many photos, and you're thinking, oh, is it going to be okay or is it not? Is it going to be a bit rubbish and blah blah blah? And I just realised, it's like, God, I'm getting stressed about going on holiday. This is bonkers. So what we ended up in the end is we went camping down in Bath and had a really lovely time. So which was much better, and blah blah blah, save the planet, didn't fly a plane, yuck, yada yada yada. Yeah. So it's expectation. Expectation is kind of, in a way, that's we think it should be different from what it is. You could say that's the Buddha's kind of key insight into what, in a sense, what the problem is. And you might think that here I am talking about going on holiday. In a way, that's quite a gross example, isn't it? But what the Buddha's, one of the really important things about Buddhist principles is that they apply on lots of different levels. Yeah, they apply on lots of different levels. So that's a very kind of simplistic example. But there's more and more subtle levels in which it applies, you know, like you... one of the more immediate but still not very less subtle ones is, you know, how we think about our bodies. You know, is our body good enough? And it's like the level of stress, you know, I and other people experience about our bodies and what it should be like, and it should be different, and da-da-da. You know, like, think of the billions and billions of pounds, dollars, yen, rupees that the people on this planet spend trying to make their bodies different from what they are. Yeah? You're like, it's a really, like... Oh yeah, we just want to be happy and we just want to look nice and we want people to like us and love us, and that's all fine. But yet, what's driving it is this deep desire to want it to be different from what it is. And you can take it further than that, of course. You know, the Buddha's insight is that there's this very kind of subtle drive right in the centre of us to make, you know, to like this kind of make, wanting to be safe, wanting to be real. That you could say is an expression of this. We want it to be different than what it is. You know, here we are just having this experience of going through life. We try to fix it, identify, make it something. And that's what causes the discomfort. That's what causes the pain. So to bring that back down to earth a bit, or to put that in a more immediately thinkable way, we want things to be different than how they are. What does that look like? One of the ways the Buddha talked about it, he said, what we do is we have unwise attention. Yeah, so we just pay attention to our experience in an unwise way, and in a way unwise is kind of kind, isn't it? It's not bad, it's not wrong, it's just a bit unwise. It's like, hey folks, look, you're looking at things in a way which I'm not sure if that's the best way of looking at things. So we have unwise attention, we can have, and of course, again, yeah, we all dip in and out of this. Some moments we have really wise attention, and other wise moments we have less wise attention. I'm not telling you that you're getting your life wrong. Although sometimes we are, and sometimes we're causing ourselves a lot of pain in the way we lead our lives. So yeah, so we've got unwise attention, and we have unwise attention in the moment and to the big picture of our lives. You know, like that, we have unwise attention to the whole of our life and in this very moment and everything in between. So what is the nature of unwise attention? What does that mean? What it means is the way we perceive pleasure and pain, yeah? So pleasure and pain are the fundamental driving forces of life, yeah? I want, I don't want. That's the constant movement. I want this, I don't want that. That's what drives life, yeah? That's what drives life. Moving towards pleasure, pushing away pain. As I said at the start, completely natural. But the point is that we don't see it in a balanced way, we don't see it in an accurate way, we don't see the whole picture. That's what unwise attention means. We're not seeing the whole thing, and that means that we make unwise choices. Give you some examples of that. The most obvious one is the pursuit of pleasure, yeah? We pursue pleasure and, there's the law of diminishing returns, isn't there? Like the metaphor I feel the metaphor for 21st century is the box set. Yeah, some of you heard me talking about this before. You have a box set, you know, you watch, you know, like box sets are good, you know, they're much better, there's quality acting, there's a well-developed storyline, blah, blah, blah. So you watch, you know, you watch episode one, you're like, oh, that was really good. Episode two, episode three, episode four, 2 o'clock in the morning, go to bed late, wake up the next day, feel done in. Yeah, that is unwise attention. Because you've had, you know, like watching episode one was pleasurable, it was enjoyable, you know, you've had a busy day at work, you want to unwind. You watch, you know, you watch some telly, it's human, it's fine, give yourself a break, folks. But then the thing is that we focus in on the pleasurable bit, we think it should be different, we want more pleasure. It's like, we want more pleasure. It's like, oh, I'm not satisfied. I want more. So then you go and get some more. But then, of course, you get into this cycle of diminishing returns where the more you have of it, the less good it is. Sure, you've noticed that, you know, like, particularly comedy shows, it's very interesting, isn't it? You watch episode one of a comedy show and you laugh loads. And you're like, let's watch episode two. And it's less funny. It's not that the show's less funny. It's just that you've kind of used up your laughs. Or you're kind of like, the laughs are, they're running out. Don't quite know where I'm going with that metaphor, but you know what I mean. Yeah, so it's like the expectation of pleasure, the amount of pleasure we expect from our experience is unbalanced, yeah? It's like, and again, that's where we come back to advertising, you know, like Magnums. It's summer, isn't it? It's like you're like, ooh, I'm going to have a Magnum, you know? Like it's another kind of core metaphor for pleasure in the summer, isn't it? And you sit down and you unk. And you kind of, you know, we kind of subconsciously, but really do expect to be transported to a magical realm where there's incredibly attractive members of people who we find sexually attractive kind of like moving towards us, and it's beautiful sunshine. That's what we think should happen. It doesn't. So then, maybe it does for you, I don't know. It's like, hey. So then we think, I know the solution is to have another one. Doesn't work. So it's all about its expectations and the consequences. And of course, this is where we step into the bigger picture of our lives. You know, like what are the consequences of our actions? Whether that be, you know, the pursuit of pleasure, staying up too late, watching TV, or of course the global ramifications of that. You know, like our society is churning, you know, consuming global resources at a really fast rate, predominantly in the pursuit of pleasure. How many new phones do you need? How many new pairs of clothes do you need? It's like... And again, nothing wrong with a new phone, nothing wrong with a pair of clothes. But are you expecting more than it can give? But yeah, but there's also this unwise attention. We can also give it to the difficult experiences of life. You know, in a way, the core aspect of unwise attention to difficult experiences of life is that we go through life having a story that we shouldn't have painful experiences. And then when we do, we give ourselves a hard time about having painful experiences, makes it all worse. You know, like, just the belief that we shouldn't experience depression, anxiety, pain, feeling like life is pointless. You know, we all experience those feelings sometimes, and the feeling and the story that we shouldn't be having that feeling just makes it all a lot worse. Yeah. So you could say the unwise attention there is kind of narrowing in, focusing on, like, why is it happening to me? Why am I feeling like this? I shouldn't be feeling like this. You're just adding all this, you know, unpleasant experience on top of an already unpleasant experience. One of my friends used to have this lovely phrase, which you might not get, but I think it's really, in a way, it's a central aspect of just being a happy human being. You've got to be okay with being not okay. Yeah, you've got to be okay with being not okay. If you're not okay with being not okay, it's just really difficult because it just spiral down. So it's just being okay with not being okay. It's hard, isn't it? Like, I was feeling not okay last night. I was having a moan to my partner. I was like, oh, feeling really sorry. I was feeling a bit sorry for myself. She's very good. She's kind of sympathetic and understanding. At a certain point, she kind of loses interest and says, like, get over yourself. You know, it's like, oh yeah, don't you? You know, you have a lovely job. You know, I'm very happy with my partner. I've got a nice house. It's like, get over yourself. And that isn't harsh. That's not cruel. It's just like having perspective. I want to say a bit more about pointlessness. Because it's, I don't know, like in a way, I suppose this is one of the things I struggle with, like, what is the point of being alive? Does anyone else ever wonder that? Like, what is the point? And what I find is that that kind of, it sucks me really deep into this pleasure and pain thing, because I sit there going, what is the point of being alive? And our society tells us the point of being alive is to experience as much pleasure as you possibly can. And that's when I start getting really confused, because I'm like, oh, I need to have more pleasure in my life. And I start looking around for something that will, like something ultimately satisfying. That sort of thing where, is the completely satisfying box set, computer game, chocolate bar, sexual experience, whatever it is, cat, flowers, garden, gym. And it's like it never adds up, does it? It never adds up, and it's like, and yet, then you can again, you can just get propelled into like, oh, it's all horrible. It's wonderful, isn't it? It's good that I don't script what I'm going to say too much, because I'm. It's like I wasn't going to say any of that, but I think it's true. I tell you, in a sense, this you might find this slightly uncomfortable, but I had this really decisive experience about 10 years ago. I was on. Sometimes we go on retreats, which are like, you go away to the countryside and you have more time to meditation and space and all of that. So I was on this quite intense retreat. I'd been practicing Buddhism for quite a long time. And it was just late in the evening, and one of the people who was on the retreat, the person who was leading it, hadn't come for dinner. And we were all kind of sitting there politely waiting for him. And I thought, he's just forgotten the time, so I went to go and get him. And on the way there, it was in the dark in Wales in February or something like that, I fell over and in the rock I cut my hand, yeah? So I've got like a fingernail width scar on my hand, yeah? So I fell over and cut my hand. I was in a bit of a rush, I didn't really notice, you don't notice these things. Sat down and ate dinner, hadn't really sunk in, and then sat down to meditate. And I was sitting there meditating for about, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes. And, I was quite aware, and I was just aware of these waves of pain, yeah? Like, it was a reasonably deep cut, it was kind of past the, you could see the, flesh. I've never seen flesh in that kind of way, but it was still, it's only for working my fingernail. Like, come on, folks, let's keep this in perspective. But I was experiencing these waves of pain as I was sitting there in this quite aware state. And the thought that went through my mind is, like, this is, each moment is like, it's dozens of donuts, yeah? Like, the amount of pleasure I get from a donut. This, each moment of pain, it's like it's a dozen donuts worth of, like, if there's some kind of scales, and it's like, here's pleasure and here's pain. Each moment of this experience was a dozen donuts, yeah? Do you see what I'm saying? And you're sitting there thinking, it's a tiny cut on your hand, In terms of the scope of the painful experiences that human beings go through in this life, it is nothing. And yet, it's dozens of donuts. It felt a bit pointless, because I was like, my God, like, well, the question is, how on earth are you going to get that scale to balance up? You can't. For the pursuit of pleasure as opposed to the avoidance of pain, it can never work. Sorry, folks, if that's slightly upsetting, but I think it's true. Well, you can disagree if you like and ignore me, that's fine. Yes. So this pursuit of pleasure, this avoidance of pain, this unwise attention, this sort of, because it's really important to be really clear. Buddhism is saying you want to be happy, you want to experience pleasure. That is completely natural. Go for it. Just kind of like, in a way, what Buddhism is saying is like, just get better quality pleasure, which is more satisfying. We'll come on to that in a minute. So it's not that there is no pleasure in life, it's just about having a balanced perspective and relationship with it. And again, obviously, you're all intelligent adults. Most of you have probably most of you have done this already, at least in some aspects of your life. Like, that's what's different about children, isn't it? Little kids are just like, wah, don't like it. And it's like, none of us like it. Deal with it. Yeah. So somehow, and this kind of tendency is being played out in our world, this movement towards pleasure, this pushing away from pain, this unbalanced perception, unrealistic expectations, that's what's driving our whole planet. Rampant consumerism is just an expression of a pursuit of pleasure. War and conflict is a pushing away of pain, it's kind of complex, isn't it? But it's rooted in pain. It's rooted in delusion. It's rooted in the desire. It's like, I want pleasure, and I think I'm going to get pleasure if I have dominion over your country. Bonkers people. But it's just human. People just want to be happy by just doing what they think is right, will work. So what's the solution? Yeah. So as I said at the start, in a way it's kind of common sense, isn't it? But then it's like, so it's easy to say what's wrong with the world. It's harder to say what's right with the world. What's the solution? The solution, surprise, surprise, is wise attention. Yeah, so it's not, and the thing again, it's like, it's not radically different, it's just how we see things, it's how we look at things. So what is wise attention? Wise attention is first and foremost, and most centrally important, it's kind. Yeah, it's kind. We, again, you know, you can't say this too many times, human beings just want to be happy, we just want to be well. So it's sort of like, it's just understanding that. And it's sort of like, it is a bit like treating ourselves like kids. It's like, no, I know you want the ride to carry on going. I know you, whatever. But it's like, but it doesn't quite work like that. Just being kind, really kind to ourselves and other people. In the way, this is so important because it goes against this whole thing of we think we're getting it wrong. We think it should be different. We think our lives should be different from what they are. That is inherently an unkind perspective, yeah? I'm not okay. We're not okay and we need to be doing something different to be okay. That is an unkind perspective. So just being really kind, yeah? There's a really interesting bit of neuroscience here which I like telling people about. The technical term is negativity bias. So negativity bias, again, some of those of you who have heard me saying things before will have heard about this. Negativity bias is the biologically extremely useful feature of us to pay more attention to pain than pleasure. Really helpful when you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger to really clearly identify the saber-toothed tiger and run away from it. Like the story I say is, one saber-toothed tiger over there, a million juicy mangoes over there, doesn't matter. If a saber-toothed tiger gets you, no amount of juicy mangoes makes a difference. So we're pre-programmed to focus on pain, to focus on what's wrong. Yeah. But the thing is that in our lives today, we're predominantly safe. Yeah, so that tendency gets rerouted into the all kinds of areas where we don't really need it anymore. That's why, like all those little examples, that's why when somebody says, you've had some friends over, you've cooked a meal, and everyone's saying, oh, that's really nice, that's really nice. And then somebody says, yeah, but that bit wasn't very good, was it? And that's the bit you remember. That's negativity bias. Yeah, it's like when you post something on Facebook and 10 people put smiley faces and one person puts something kind of a bit narky. That's the one you remember. That is negativity bias. And our duty to ourselves is to reprogram that bias. And you can do it, but it does take time. So wise attention is kind. It has perspective, yeah? You could say this is the main thing that Buddhism does, is it brings perspective to our lives. And I would argue there's lots of ways it brings perspective, but the main one is it brings perspective to this pursuit of pleasure and pain. And it says, hey folks, guess what? If you're just pursuing pleasure and pain, it's not going to work. Let's think about life in a different way. Let's look for a sense of meaning and purpose in life, because that ultimately is going to work a lot better for you. The kind of modern economic theory has got interested in this. There's the economics of happiness. Started just before the economic crash, so in about 2006, the book I've read about it, by this guy called Lord Layard, published a book called Happiness, Blueprint for a New Economics, or something like that, I can't remember. Anyway, one of the things he says in it, the thing that I quote about it, is he says, they've done this study all over the world, and it always bears true, that on here you've got happiness, and here you've got money, and up to a certain point, there's a direct ratio. Up in UK culture, it's about 20 grand a year, something like that. Up to 20 grand a year of annual income, more money makes you happier. Yeah, definitely does. Not always, not necessarily, but there's a direct correlation. After that, there is no discernible increase in happiness for more money you've got. Absolutely none. Yeah, completely flat lines. Lots of people have disagreed with this and done additional research, but it's just true. So what does make a difference? What makes a difference is an experience of connection and an experience of meaning. Yeah, because obviously some rich people are really happy, some poor people are really happy. Yeah, so there's obviously some rich people are happy. Where do they find their happiness? They have a sense of connection and meaning. That's factor X in human well-being. So you could say that's a sense of perspective. Yeah, I would argue that particularly that sense of meaning Meaning is having a perspective on your life, a sense of what is life about, where is it going? And principally, that meaning is it's something other than the pursuit of your immediate pleasure, because the scales will never balance. Like, in a way, that's part of like the joys of parenting, isn't it? Not that I have kids, but you know, the joys of parenting is sort of like having a sense of meaning, you know, bringing this other being into this world. That's some life being about something other than just you. Yeah, so perspective, seeing a bigger picture. And finally, wise attention is lived. Yeah, you do something, we do something. It's what is acting upon things. That's what makes a difference. So another little story I like is, I read this in a newspaper years ago, but I found it very, very striking. It was they did a survey of six-year-olds, and they asked six-year-olds what they thought about the world. One of the questions was, are you worried about global warming? Half of them said yes, half of them said no. The ones who said no were asked, why aren't you worried about global warming? Given six-year-olds, it's like, hey, folks, it's going to be pretty bad, and it's going to happen in your life. And the reason they said is because, oh, because we've got a little nature garden in school. Oh, because we do the recycling. Oh, because mummy and daddy kind of like have got solar panels fitted, or, you know, whatever. Yeah, they were doing something about it, so they weren't worried about it. I thought that was very striking. I found that quite striking. Well, I remember it because it supports a perspective which I agree with. That would be more true. So yes, and more traditionally, wise attention is described as seeing the actual ratios of pleasure and pain in our experience. That's what the Buddha would say wise attention is. I've kind of said kind, perspective, and lived because I'm making a point. So it's wise attention is seeing the actual ratios of pleasure and pain in our experience, being honest about it, evaluating it, and evaluating how we lead our lives on that basis. So what has all that got to do with finding peace in a frantic world, which was the title of this talk? Well, in a way, the answer is that the way we find peace in a frantic world is by having wise attention, by living from principles, I suppose I would argue. It's lots of other things it is, but that's part of it. That's what Buddhism has got to contribute. So what is Buddhism? How does Buddhism help people find peace in a frantic world? Yeah, you can, during the tea break, you can ask each other about this. So it's like, well, how does, yeah, those, you know, there's a ratio of you. Some of you have been practicing Buddhism for quite a while. Some of you have never been here before. Ask each other. I invite you to. How does Buddhism help you find peace in a frantic world, assuming it does? What I would argue is that it does so by just communicating a few very simple perspectives. First of all, our experience is decisively led by our mind. Yeah, our experience is decisively led by our mind. And the point there is that's empowering. Yeah, you've got control over that. You can do something about that. How you lead your life, how you see your life is up to you no matter what situation you are in. I can never remember his name. I think it's Levi Strauss, one of the, anyway, can't remember his name. Guy who was Jewish guy in the concentration camps, got interested in why people coped. Yeah, concentration camps, one of the worst collective experiences in recent human history. Some people coped, other people didn't. Most people didn't cope, give them a break. Yeah, horrific set of situation to be in. The people who coped, what he identified was they had a sense of initiative. They had a sense of, no matter what the horror out there is happening, I can control, I've got some influence over my own mind and how I respond to this. That was his perception. That's the people who survived that experience. That's what they all had in common. Experience is decisively led by mind. Decisively, not only, because of course, yeah, there are external influencing factors. Life is meaningful, a sense of there is some kind of purpose in life, that there's something to move towards, there's possibility, the possibility of awakening, the possibility of happiness, however you want to conceive of it for yourself. And actually living your life like that means, helps you relax, helps you have a perspective on the busyness, the anxiety, the depression, the pursuit of pleasure. And action is crucial. What you do makes a difference, how you act, how you behave. Yeah. So experience is this, you know, like, so your mind is decisive, but then how you act in the world is crucial. You know, both are really important. If you have one without the other, you get messy. it's interesting, like, again, grossly generalising. Well, not grossly generalising, but extrapolating. People who work in caring professions, like teachers, nurses, doctors, social activists, a lot of them experience burnout. And the reason, one of the reasons for this, and my friends who work in this field would say, one of the reasons is they don't understand the importance of working on their own minds. They're focused on action is crucial, but they don't attend to their own minds, they don't look after their minds, so they get overwhelmed, angry, bitter, hateful, just burn out. You know, I was talking to a young woman just the other day, and she's saying, oh, I've had enough of teaching, I'm going to get out of it. I didn't ask her how long she'd been a teacher, I'd have guessed 2 to 3 years, and she's already had enough. So it's unfortunate. So experience is decisively led by mind, and action is crucial. Yeah, those are the two, that's the start and the end of the Buddhist tradition. And in a way, everything else is just detail. Those are principles, and everything else takes more time to work out. In a certain way, I'm less interested in that. Because if you get that, then you can work out the rest for yourself. But just to say a bit more, just to finish off. So another decisive thing is that we set up conditions and the results will come, yeah? So it's very interesting teaching people to meditate. You know, people often come here and they say, oh, I feel anxious, I feel stressed, I want an inner peace. Yeah, that's what people want. But the danger is that we think that you can just go off a supermarket shelf and buy it. It's like, oh yeah, can I have some inner peace, please? Chick, you know, like instant gratification culture. It's very, very strong, you know, like, I think it's really worth taking on board just how strong our culture is. Like, obviously, there's a diverse range of ages in this room, so we've had different experiences of this, but, you know, like, if you think about it, if you go back, I don't know, like, if you go back 15 years, if you wanted something, you had to get up out of your chair and you had to go somewhere and get it and buy it, bring it back. Yeah, you can guess where you're going with this. It's like, there's quite a gap between wanting something and getting it. Yeah, I don't know when it was, probably about 2003, Amazon. It's like, oh, great, you just sit in your chair, you want something, and you go, and like 2 days later, you get it. It's like, this is good, isn't it? We roll forward, I don't know, when you got your eye gadget, it, like, kind of come 2008, you want something, you just go, click, and you've got it. It's like, it's worth recognising just how strong that conditioning influences on our minds. The expectation, like, is strong anyway, but we think that we should get things instantly, instant gratification. It's, you know, it's horrible. It's not true. Yeah, it's not true. Things, it's anyway, it's again, it's stating something obvious. Something's worth getting. It takes time. And in a way, it also reinforces this kind of constant pursuit of pleasure, doesn't it? Because it's like, you're sitting there, you know, like 15 years ago, you're sitting there and you're kind of like a bit dissatisfied. You want something. And you have to sit with it, don't you? Or you go out and go for a walk. These days, it's like, if you've got that kind of like, I want something, I don't quite know what it is. 10 seconds later, you're watching your next episode of your box set, you know, or you've streamed, or you've downloaded a new game, or you blah, 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 whatever it is that you do. It's like, it's worth emphasising just how much that habituates us to thinking that there's something wrong and we can get something from outside of us to make it better. Because that's what our world's telling us. It's like, oh yeah, just download the new blah and you'll get it and then it'll be all okay. It's very, very strong, you know. I'm sure you've all had it, you know, like I definitely have it, you know, reading novels. You're kind of sitting around and you're like, I know, you just go, you know, you get your whatever it is, your Kindle app, whatever, and 10 seconds later you've got a novel. It's like that. It's amazing, isn't it? Wonderful. But it does habituate us to a certain tendency of expecting things to be instantly gratifying and just constantly going after pleasure. So yeah, so set up the conditions and the results will come. Yeah, embarking on the journey of meditation. Yeah, that is, it doesn't happen straight away. Sometimes you can have very positive experiences very, very quickly. That's great, fantastic. We like positive experiences. That's a very good and worthwhile thing. And it's a journey. It's a journey. Yeah. Peace can be found, but we need to go on a journey to find it. So in a way, like I said at the start, it's all about kind of cliches. Well, that is such a cliche, isn't it? You know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. But unfortunately, the reason it's a cliche is because it's true. But in a way, one of the crucial distinguishing features that I think Buddhism, maybe other things do, but I can come across in Buddhism, is like it's understanding that every step of a journey is worth taking. Because I think we can, it's easy to think, oh, like a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, but you think you have to get to the end of a journey to make it worth doing. And then you think, is it really worth it? Why don't I just go and get some donuts? Yeah, that's what I think. It's like, is it really worth it? It's like, it's way over there, stuff it, I'll just stay here. But what for this perspective, like, you know, experience is decisively led by mind and action is crucial. You're like, every step, you're in a different place. You know, who knows how the world's going to look when you step here? You know, like, and it really can look really different. You know, like, if I look at my life, you know, like, some of the aspects of it, you know, I'd just be like, you know, you can look at, like, year chunks. I've been practicing Buddhism for 15 years. Like, my life is completely different to what it was 15 years ago. But it's like all along the way, you'd have said, oh yeah, like I can never do that. And then a couple of years later, there you are doing it. So it's like your perspective, as you change, your perspective change, new things become possible. And really, I'm just going to sum up now. But I suppose the most important thing, I suppose I've said, you know, like in a way, I've given you a kind of a potted introduction to the basis of Buddhism. But it's like, so this, a Buddhist manifesto, finding peace in a frantic world. So what does it boil down to? I would say it ultimately boils down to perspective. How we see our lives, yeah, that is the determining factor in our experience, actually, how you see your life, and then living from that perspective, yeah. So it's, I think it's crucial, I think one of the things Buddhism's decisively got to contribute to the world today is a bigger perspective, yeah, there's more to life than the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. That, in a way, that's Buddhism's answer to how to find peace in a frantic world. Because until you've got that, you're just going to be getting stressed out, and not being peaceful, because you're sitting there thinking, I'm getting it wrong. Why am I experiencing more pleasure? Why am I experiencing pain? It's like, you're not getting it wrong, folks. That's what life's like. And Buddhism is about having a bigger picture to see that, to put perspective on our experience of pleasure and pain.